From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Did you know that the great jazz singer and bandleader Cab Calloway has played Wilmington? Or that a group of slaves working at the Bellamy Mansion during the Civil War hijacked a skiff and sailed to the Union blockade seeking asylum? Or that the first Charlestown in the Southeast started in Brunswick County? Whether you're new to the area or just learning about the region's history, or you've been here for many years and are too embarrassed to admit you don't know the story of the Wilmington 10 or what the Bellamy Mansion actually is, now's your chance to find out safely and anonymously. Our two guests today are both consummate authorities on local and regional history. They both bring some personal history to the conversation, and they're well known through their high-profile day jobs. Tony Rivenbark is the executive director of the Thalian Hall Center for the Performing Arts. He's also written a book, Images of America, Thalian Hall, documenting the history of the building that has for so many decades served as the seat of the cultural and political landscape in Wilmington. Tony Rivenbark, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also with us today, he's a well-known staff reporter and columnist at the Star News, as well as the organizer and host of WHQR's live prologue event, the Monday Night Book Discussions, here in the MC Ernie Gallery. Ben Steelman, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
And you are invited to join the conversation. Do you have a question about local history? Have you heard a rumor that you'd like to confirm or debunk? Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send your comments or questions to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. And we'll start today with the Civil War era. We will certainly backtrack and take a look at earlier periods later in the show, but this is front of mind for many, largely because of the recent nationwide controversy over the Confederate flag after nine people died in a shooting inside an AME church in Charleston, South Carolina. And today, the Star News has published an extensive piece by Julian March on the front page about the renewed scrutiny over Civil War Confederate symbols and names that are used here in this area. In Curie Beach, there's a President Davis Avenue in Pine Valley, which was the focus of the article. There's a Robert E. Lee Drive. There's a Bedford Forest Drive. Bedford Forest, as I understand it, led the Ku Klux Klan. Considering what these names represent, Ben Steelman, how and why have they been memorialized here?
Well, partly Southerners, white Southerners, were very proud of that part of their heritage. It also underlined certain Southern values, particularly, unfortunately, resistance to desegregation. It's sort of not too coincidental that the Pine Valley names were kind of adopted in the 1960s during the Civil Rights era. But it's a reflection of the South.
And Tony Rivenbark, you have some interesting family history with this, your perspective.
Well, I'm from Eastern North Carolina. My family have been there on both sides, you know, going back to before the Revolution. And so certainly I had ancestors that fought in the Confederate Army. And as I was very interested in the Civil War, you know, when I was in high school, and of course that was the 60s, which was the 100th anniversary. And I was president of the Duplin County Children of the Confederacy chapter and came to Wilmington when they had the state conference and all this stuff. So I was part of all of that stuff. I never thought of it in terms of racially, though. It all had to do with about the war and young guys love playing battles, fighting battles, whatever it is, and we just happened to do the Civil War. It was a colorful and interesting period. Only as time went on and went going to school, and then the school was integrated, but then particularly into college, starts seeing things in a different kind of light. And as most of us, or many, certainly a great many people in the South, have, you know, changed a lot of those attitudes and have become, you know, what was not acceptable when we were kids and we never questioned it is something that now we do question. about those things.
And you told me earlier, Tony, that you took down a picture recently of Robert E. Lee. Tell us why you decided to do that.
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, one time I was talking to somebody and they made some comment about me and they said, oh, you're just like the people that ride around in a pickup truck with a Confederate flag and a gun rack on your car. And it irritated me, so I went home and pulled out all my Confederate stuff and put it up. But gradually over the years, I put it away. And the other day, this recent business, this terrible situation in Charleston. And I said, you know, I don't need a picture of Robert E. Lee hanging him. You know, it was a tiny one on the shelf. I don't really need that anymore. Plus the fact I don't have enough room for everything anyway. So I've pulled whatever little bit there was left. Like I said, because I think it belongs in a museum. Now, it might be a play sometimes doing where that's important as a piece of set decoration. But personally, I don't need it anymore.
Ben Steelman, you also grew up in North Carolina.
Yeah, I can actually top Tony. I'm a sort of sideways descendant of Robert Frederick Hoke, the Confederate general who was camped out at Sugarloaf while Fort Fisher was falling. That's a whole different story. My father's name was Hoke Steelman. So anyway, so that's a little that was a minor point of pride. Of course, white Southerners need to be reminded that not all of their neighbors feel the same way about their heritage as we might, and that we have to admit that yes, probably slavery is a horror, and yes, the right side won the war, but anyway, Dylan Roof, the parent. Gunman in the Emmanuel AME shooting sort of spoiled it for everybody by waving his little Confederate flag around. That's a whole different symbolism. I had an interesting discussion though with Melton McLaurin, who is a retired history professor at UNCW, and he was co-chair with Bertha Todd of the 1898 Commemoration Committee, and he said, and I'm sort of loosely quoting him, you know, this is not a big issue. This is a side issue. The big issues are equality of educational opportunity, equality of employment opportunity. These are the things that are going to change things, and this is what we ought to be focusing on rather than changing the names of streets or parks or anything like that.
That's a really interesting way that you characterized what Dylan Roof did. You said he spoiled it for everybody. There are a lot of people, many of them from northern part or other parts of this country, people who didn't grow up in the South, who don't really have that sense of cultural heritage internalized, who look at the Confederate flag and do see the emblem of the fight to keep slavery, which is, you know, a fight for human oppression. So how do you tease that apart when you're looking at it through a historical lens versus a personal lens, Ben Steelman?
Probably most white Southerners rationalize it by saying, you hear the phrase a lot, it's about heritage, not hate. And they saw their ancestors as fighting to defend their homes. Most Southerners did not own slaves. Certainly most of the privates in the Confederate Army did not own slaves. And they were defending their homes. And when their homes were occupied by the Yankees, they up and deserted to take care of their families. So I think that's part of it. But we have to admit that, yes, slavery was an issue. Alexander Stevens, the vice president of the Confederacy, wrote as much. Bedford Forrest said the same thing, although not as politely as Mr. Stevens did. It's something we have to face.
And when we talk about the reasons behind the Civil War, there are many people who will say this was a fight over states' rights. Slavery was sort of an ancillary issue. Is that true? Is that a smokescreen? Tony Rivenbark.
The underlying cause it had to do with the states' rights were important because people wanted to maintain the slavery as an institution. And it was dying out in the world. In other places, it was gradually being done away with. But you can't sugarcoat it. In the bottom line, that's what it was about. And it was about money, and money was tied in with slavery. That was the wealth of the South, was based in human flesh. And you take that away, then great part of the wealth is gone. So, yes, money, states' rights, power, The country was divided in a sense evenly to some degree, but it was beginning to shift toward the northern manufacturing, and the Southerners resented that. But still, you can't take that slavery as the underlying bottom dark side of this, no matter how you slice it.
We have some rich historical sites right here in the Wilmington area related to the Civil War. Fort Fisher, for instance. For folks who aren't familiar with that, Ben Steelman, can you tell us what Fort Fisher is and why
Fort
it was
Fisher,
important?
Fort Fisher guarded the new inlet into the Cape Fear River and up to Wilmington. The new inlet no longer exists. It was closed in the late 1800s in a massive Corps of Engineer project led by the father of Henry Bacon. Bacon later became famous as the architect of the Lincoln Memorial, and he's actually buried here in town. But anyway, that kept the port of Wilmington, which is normally a very small, insignificant port, open, even as other Confederate ports were closed. And Robert E. Lee famously wrote that if Wilmington fell, he would not be able to keep his army in the field. And in fact, the Army of Northern Virginia lasted barely 90 days after the fall of Fort Fisher. So it's a battle that's often overlooked. When the final battle occurred in January of 1865, there are only about 1,800 Confederates on one side and about four times that many Union soldiers and sailors on the other. But it was a very strategic battle, and more people recognize that.
We have an email from George Thomas in Wilmington. He says, less reported is the fact that many in the southern states opposed secession. There were pockets of resistance throughout North Carolina. He says, any resistance in Wilmington? And we'll let the two of you think about that during the break and answer it when we come back. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a trip through the history books with Tony Rivenbark of Thalian Hall and Ben Steelman of the Star News. Do you have a question about a piece of local history, whether it's true or just urban legend? Do you have your own family history from this area to share? Give us a call. Ask your question at 910-343-1138. This is Coastline.